Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really zoning in on a fascinating high-value part of healthcare, the U.S. dental implant market.
It really is booming, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the numbers are quite something. Over 3.7 million implants sold back in 2022, and it's been growing, what, like 6% a year, pretty consistently.
Yeah, since around 2010, that's been the trend. Steady growth.
But here's the thing, right? In such a big competitive field, just being good with the drill isn't enough anymore. Success is really measured by the numbers.
That's exactly the shift we're seeing. And that's our mission today, really. For anyone listening, maybe you run a clinic, maybe you invest, maybe you're just interested, we want to lay out the actual benchmarks.
The hard data.
The hard data, yeah. We're using analytics mostly from 2022 to 2024, pulling from industry reports, big corporate network data, to really show what separates, you know, an average practice from a top-tier implant center.
Okay, so we're digging into the data that shows how dentistry is becoming more, I guess, systematized. We need those KPIs, those key performance indicators. So let's start with the basics, the financial scorecard. What are the absolute must-know metrics for judging a practice's performance?
Okay, so there are three core pillars you absolutely have to track. First, revenue per operatory. Second, revenue per provider. And third, flowing from those, your profit margins.
Right. Get the first two right, and the third one hopefully follows.
Pretty much. You need utilization before you can talk profit.
Let's tackle the physical space first, then. Revenue per operatory. If someone listening has, say, four chairs in their practice, what kind of revenue should each chair be pulling in?
Good question. The operatory, the chair, that's your fundamental production unit. So nationally, the average benchmark for one single operatory is generating around $232,000 per year.
Okay, $232,000 per chair. That's the baseline.
That's your baseline.
So if you take that number, a typical, say, three or four operatory private practice, which is super common, right, that lands you somewhere between $700,000 and $900,000 total annual revenue. That math checks out.
It does. But this is where specialization really throws a wrench in the averages. Practices that focus heavily on implants, maybe cosmetic work too, they're often doing $1.5 million, even $2.5 million annually. Mm-hmm. And they're easily clearing the $300,000 per operatory mark, sometimes significantly more.
So like a 30% jump, maybe more, just from focusing on higher value procedures.
Exactly. The case value is just so much higher. It changes the whole equation for that chair.
That really drives home the power of finding a niche. Okay, but utilization isn't just the chair. It's also the person using the chair. Let's shift to provider productivity. What's the average total production for a dentist?
Right. So if you look at the dentist's total production, and this includes all the hygiene revenue they oversee.
Okay. So everything under their name.
Yeah. That averages about $977,000 annually. Almost $1 million.
Almost a million.
But, and this is important, you need to look at their personal production. What are they actually doing with their own two hands if you strip out the hygienist's contribution?
Right.
That number drops significantly. It goes down to around $730,000 per year.
Huh. So that's a gap of what, nearly $250,000?
Yeah, about $247,000. It's a big difference.
That's a really key insight for managing a practice, isn't it? It shows a productive dentist isn't just busy, they're leveraging their team effectively.
Couldn't have said it better. It's all about leverage. And, you know, if we then look at specialists, implantologists, orthodontists.
For real high-end stuff.
Yeah, they're playing a different game entirely. They're often generating $1.5 million to $2 million in revenue per provider.
Just one person driving that much revenue.
Because the value of those specialized services is just that much higher. It's the quickest route to multiplying your per provider revenue.
Fascinating. But, you know, high production is great, but it only really matters if you're actually making money at the end of the day. Let's talk profitability, margins. What's a healthy overhead percentage to aim for?
Okay, so the standard operating margin, this is profit before tax in the typical private dental world. It tends to hover around 30% to 40%.
Meaning overhead is about 60, 70%.
Exactly. The median overhead ratio we see in the data is about 61.9%, which leaves, roughly 38% as that pre-tax operational profit.
Okay, 38%. But, and I think this trips people up, especially owner dentists, that's not quite the final number you put in the bank, right?
Correct.
Because you have to pay yourself.
This is such a critical point for any owner dentist listening. That 30, 40% figure, it's before you account for the owner's own salary as a legitimate business expense.
Right. You have to factor in what it would cost to hire someone to do your job.
Precisely. And once you deduct a fair market salary for the owner-dentist, the average net margin, the actual profit left over, usually drops quite dramatically. It typically settles somewhere around 12% to 13%.
Okay, 12, 13% net. That feels more realistic.
It is. But what we do see is that practices really focused on implants often beat those averages. Why? Because implant procedures inherently carry higher margins, so they can absorb the owner's salary better and still maintain strong profitability.
Right, the high margins protect the bottom line even after paying everyone, including the owner. That makes sense. Okay, so we set the benchmarks. Let's talk structure. How do different practice models achieve these results? We know most dentists are solo, right? Like 90%.
Yeah, the vast majority. It's the classic small business model.
Yeah.
One doctor, maybe 2 to 4 operatories, a couple of admin staff.
And their revenue is typically in that range we mentioned earlier.
Yep, generally landing somewhere in that $650,000 to $700,000 annual revenue zone. It's a solid, stable model, but obviously its success really hinges on that one single dentist's ability to bring in patients and produce.
And if they want to grow beyond that, group practices seem like the next logical step. Just add another doctor doing 700Ks, and boom, you're at $1.4 million.
It's pretty much simple math at that level, yes. Two doctors, potentially double the revenue, maybe some shared overhead savings. But the real leap, the big game changer, is when you get into scale, specifically dental service organizations, DSOs.
Ah, the DSOs. They're everywhere now. What percentage of dentists are working in that model?
The numbers hover around 15% to 20% of all U.S. dentists are now part of a DSO network. And they're the ones actively buying up successful group practices.
When does a practice become an attractive target for a DSO? Is there a revenue threshold?
Generally, yeah. Once a group practice hits that $800,000 to $1 million plus revenue mark, and usually has 5 or more operatories, they start appearing on the DSO radar.
Okay. We hear DSO all the time, but what's the fundamental change when a practice joins one? Beyond just getting better prices on supplies, what's the core operational difference?
It's really about massive institutional-level standardization. Think moving from a craft or boutique model to more of an industrialized, science-driven approach.
Okay. Can you give some numbers? Like, what does a typical DSO office generate compared to that solo $700?
Let's take a big one, like Heartland Dental. They're mostly general dentistry. Recent estimates put their average revenue at around $2.7 million per office.
Whoa. Okay, $2.7 million average. That's nearly 4 times the solo average. That's significant.
It is. But wait, you mentioned implants earlier. Let's look at a specialized network. ClearChoice focuses almost entirely on complex, full-arch implant cases.
Right, the really high-value stuff.
Exactly. Back in their earlier years, around 2019, their data showed they were generating over $4 million per center.
4 million per location. Okay, how on earth do they get to that number? That's like 6 times the solo practice.
Right. It makes you stop and think. And the answer seems to be twofold. First, yes, economies of scale are huge centralized billing, admin, marketing, bulk purchasing that drives down costs significantly.
Okay, the corporate advantages.
But second, and maybe even more critical, is relentless maximization of utilization. They design these large centers, sometimes with dozens of operatories. They run extended hours, evenings, weekends.
Squeezing every possible minute out of those
Every
chairs.
minute. And they structure the workflow to maximize provider time, too.
That focus on scale and centralization leads perfectly into the efficiency playbook. We know they're making huge money per chair, but how? Operationally, how do they minimize that dreaded chair downtime?
It starts with absolutely meticulous scheduling. They're using automated reminder systems, texts, emails going out a month before, a week before, the day before.
Standard stuff, okay.
Standard, but rigorously applied. Plus, they maintain active waiting lists. Someone cancels, boom, that slot is filled almost instantly. But the real peak efficiency, especially in those big $4 million implant centers, is something called parallel procedures.
Parallel procedures. Okay, explain that.
So instead of the traditional model, one doctor, one patient, start to finish, they use a team approach. The doctor might work alongside a dedicated staff anesthesiologist and several specialized assistants.
Right.
The doctor might prep patient A for surgery, then immediately step into the next operatory to perform the actual surgery on patient B, who was prepped by an assistant, while patient A is being monitored or beginning recovery managed by the team.
Ah, like an assembly line for dentistry.
It sounds a bit like that, yeah. It's a very dynamic workflow. It dramatically boosts the number of high-value procedures a single provider can perform in a day, making every minute hyperproductive and billable.
Okay, that sounds incredibly efficient, but it must demand an insane level of standardization. Don't those detailed standard operating procedures, SOPs, kind of restrict the clinician's autonomy or craft?
That's the trade-off you make for that level of scale and efficiency. And the data suggests the most successful DSOs absolutely view it as a necessary investment, not a restriction.
So SOPs for everything?
Pretty much. Insurance checks, room turnover, sterilization protocols, patient handoffs. Everything is documented and drilled. It minimizes errors, speeds things up. And they invest heavily in it.
Oh, heavily.
Well, sources suggest major DSOs like Heartland actually budget around 2.5% of their total revenue specifically for training doctors and assistants on these standardized processes.
Wow, 2.5% just on training for SOPs. They see it as a direct driver of efficiency then.
Absolutely. It's the cost of ensuring predictable, efficient operations across hundreds of locations.
And efficiency today obviously means technology too. What specific tech is really moving the needle in terms of speed and accuracy for these high-value procedures?
The big ones that keep coming up are CAD/CAM systems. Being able to design and mill crowns or surgical guides right there in the office, that's huge. It turns multiple appointments into one.
Same-day dentistry.
Exactly. And you absolutely need the prerequisite tech for that, which is the 3D cone beam CT scanner for incredibly detailed imaging and planning.
Makes sense. What about newer stuff, AI?
Yeah, AI is definitely the emerging trend. We're seeing AI tools increasingly used to automate routine, time-consuming tasks. Things like initial image analysis, insurance coding suggestions, even preliminary reads on CT scans.
So the idea is letting the tech handle the grunt work.
Basically, yeah. Work smarter, not harder. If AI can handle some of the background processing, it frees up the dentist and the team to focus purely on patient care and production. Big productivity gain.
Okay, so we've covered optimizing the chairs, optimizing the staff through SOPs and training, and leveraging tech. What about optimizing the revenue from each patient who walks in? That has to involve expanding services, right?
Absolutely. This is fundamental. Moving beyond basic dentistry and strategically adding high-margin services like implantology, cosmetic veneers, clear aligners like Invisalign, that's often the fastest way to boost the average revenue per patient visit.
And the ultimate version of this is that one-stop shop idea.
Exactly. Especially for complex cases like implants. If you can do the initial extraction, place the implant surgically, and fabricate the final crown or prosthesis all within your own practice.
You keep all the revenue.
You keep all the revenue, and you control the entire patient journey and relationship. That clear choice model we mentioned, that's built entirely around owning the whole process in-house.
Right. But doing all this, adding tech, adding services, it costs money. How do successful practices balance this expansion with cost control, especially now with inflation?
That's the constant balancing act. And you're right, inflation is a major pressure point. We saw data that 64% of practices reported rising overhead costs in 2023.
Mostly salaries and supplies, I imagine.
Primarily, yes. Salaries, materials, lab fees, it's forcing practices to be even more diligent. The key benchmarks here are keeping total payroll costs, including benefits, ideally around 30% of revenue. Maybe slightly higher in some high-cost areas, but 30% is a good target.
And materials.
Material costs should generally be kept in the 10% to 15% range. If those numbers start creeping up, especially with inflation, practices need to be really disciplined about comparing supplier pricing, managing inventory tightly, maybe negotiating better rates with labs. Protecting that overall 30, 40% operating margin is critical.
Okay, so efficiency is optimized, costs are managed.
Yeah.
But none of it matters if the chairs are empty. We have to talk about the front door. Marketing and actually converting potential patients. Who are they targeting for these high-value implant cases?
The marketing focus is definitely laser-targeted, primarily at the 45-plus demographic. These are the folks who are statistically more likely to need major restorative work, like implants, and crucially, often have the financial means or access to credit to afford it.
And affordability is key, right? These treatments can be expensive.
Hugely important. We're talking cases that can easily run $50,000, $60,000, or even more for full mouth restorations. So financial facilitation isn't just nice to have, it's essential.
Meaning partnership with financing companies.
Exactly. Offering patient financing options, often through third-party providers like CareCredit or LendingPoint, is standard practice. It allows patients to break down that large cost into manageable monthly payments, which dramatically increases case acceptance.
Makes sense. But our sources highlighted a really big problem with traditional online marketing, this idea of a conversion crisis. What's going on there? If a practice just has a basic website with a book a free consultation button, what happens?
What happens is not much, unfortunately. The data is pretty stark. Typically, only about 2% to 3% of people who visit that website will actually click the button and submit their information.
2 to 3%. That's awful.
It's incredibly inefficient. Think about the money spent on driving traffic to that site, maybe through Google ads, social media ads. If you're paying, say, $100 for a click for a high-value implant keyword,
you're basically throwing away $97 or $98 for every 100 clicks because they don't convert.
Pretty much. It's a huge waste.
Why is it so low? What's the psychology there? Why don't people click the button?
Well, think about it from the patient's perspective. They're looking at a potentially very expensive, complex procedure. Their biggest initial question is usually, what's this going to cost me? They're essentially price shopping, at least initially.
Okay.
And that book free consultation button, it feels like a commitment. They might worry about getting a hard sell or wasting their time if it turns out to be way out of their budget. They want cost information before they talk to someone.
So they hesitate and then they bounce.
Exactly. They leave the site to keep searching elsewhere, often looking for any hint of pricing. And the solution that's really changing the game here involves using behavioral analytics, specifically introducing things like interactive cost calculators on the website.
Hold on. So tools that actually let the visitor get a rough cost estimate before they have to give up their contact info or talk to a person.
Precisely. Interactive tools, maybe you answer a few simple questions about your needs, and it gives you a realistic ballpark range for the treatment. It addresses their primary concern cost head on, transparently.
And what does that do to the conversion rate? That dismal 2-3%.
It completely transforms it. The data we've seen suggests these kinds of interactive, low-commitment tools can turn 70% of those initial price shoppers into qualified leads.
70% from 2 or 3.
It's a massive leap because you're giving them the information they crave, building trust, and offering an easy next step once they see a potential cost they can work with. It essentially solves that conversion crisis by aligning with patient behavior.
That is absolutely fascinating. What an incredible deep dive. It really paints a clear picture, doesn't it? Success in this sector, whether you're a top solo specialist hitting high numbers or a massive $4 million a year DSO center, it really boils down to precision in those key metrics, revenue per operatory, revenue per provider, and just relentless cost control and efficiency.
Absolutely. And the underlying theme connecting all of this is the steady march towards operational excellence. It's driven by standardization, by clever utilization strategies like those parallel procedures, by adopting the right tech and always focusing on those high margin services. Efficiency is the name of the game today, maximizing every single resource you have, physical, human, and digital.
Which leaves us with a really provocative closing thought for you, our listener, to chew on. We just heard about this dramatic shift in lead generation going from a 2-3% conversion rate with old-school website forms to potentially 70% using interactive, behavior-driven tools like cost calculators. Makes you wonder, if such a massive improvement was possible just by changing how we handle the initial online inquiry for high-value patients, what other digital blind spots might exist? Think about patient education portals, follow-up communication sequences, online review management. Could there be other areas where traditional methods are quietly strangling revenue potential for practices that haven't fully embraced behavioral analytics and digital optimization? It really suggests the digital front door isn't just a factor in efficiency anymore. It might be the most critical battleground.